Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Good morning, everybody. How are you? It's nice to be here. Those of you who don't know, I'm Ben DiPietro, and this is my guest, Ellen Hunt from AARP. Ellen is a senior vice president and also head of audit, ethics, and compliance at AARP, which you most know is a nonprofit that advocates for people over the age of 50. Ellen has been with AARP since January of 2011, serving in various positions of leadership in that time. Before joining AARP, she worked as a vice president of compliance at the food distribution company, U.S. Food Service, and she started her compliance career at Blue Cross Blue Shield. Graduate of John Marshall Law School in her hometown of Chicago, Ellen's widely regarded as one of the brightest minds in the field of ethics and compliance. She's been named a bright mind in compliance by Compliance Week and is currently a two-time nominee for the upcoming Women in Compliance Awards that'll be announced in March in London, including one for mentorship. Let's get started, Ellen. Tell us a little bit about AARP, what you guys do, and what your mission is.
All right. Well, at AARP, we think 50 is the new everything. Our mission is to help people choose how they live as they age. We rebranded ourselves about 5 years ago, and we're the American Association of Real Possibilities. And that's really about our focus of aging isn't a disease. It isn't about you doing less. It's about you choosing what you want to do.
Let's talk a little bit about budget. How do you figure your budget? How do you come up with the number you need? Does that get adjusted during the year depending on circumstances or what's happening? Can you get more if you ask? And what does your actual budget cover? Are there other parts of the company that have pockets of money that are used for some of the things you work on? And if so, how does all that just come together?
Yeah. My situation might be a little bit more unique than some of your other clients. My budget has stayed the same in all of the years that I've been there. We're a zero-based organization. So my challenge is each year I have to keep delivering the same plus more with the same amount of money. It won't surprise you that most of my budget goes, of course, to my personnel. And I don't have an extremely, extremely large staff. One of the things that is really another large pocket of my budget that I always get questions from the Treasury folks and the controller about is I have a contingency fund. I do run the investigations in the organization. And as I think every one of you know, you never know when you might be hit with an investigation where you have to hire outside help, whether that's counsel or investigators or auditors or whoever that may be. So that's always, every year I'm always, you know, called on the carpet as to why do you have this bucket of money that you haven't spent? And why do you need so much? Because they want a zero base. In my organization, not spending money is a good thing. They want you to really forecast as accurately as you possibly can. We are always looking for ways, and in fact, people are, as part of their performance review, graded on efficiency, right? So one of the things we always do is we sit down as a department and we say, what can we stop doing? Where are we spending money or where are we doing things that don't add any value? Because it's easy to constantly keep on the treadmill and keep doing the same old things. But if you're producing reports or information or taking time on things that don't matter to your clients, you know, your constituents, why are you doing this? And that's how we kind of really start and try to pare down and put money where it's most important. Where we really spend our money is for our case management system. That's really our largest vendor. Training has really transferred to HR, which is good and bad. On the one hand, then of course I have, you know, their help and support, but on the other hand, then I have to negotiate with them about my training and my courses.
What role does the board have in setting budget and agenda for you?
Yeah. So I report to the audit committee. I actually have, within our organization, I have three audit chairs. We have the association, we have a foundation, and then we have a for-profit arm. All three of those individuals have input and influence over my performance review, as well as a planning session about what we're going to do in the future. And I do a one-year strategy and a three-year strategy and a five-year strategy, which is pretty out there. We don't spend a lot of time with that. We really focus on the 1 to 3 year. I have never had them say, but you must do this. But I do gather their input, and I do gather their thoughts about what they think would be important. One of the things that is of great value to me is they sit, of course, on other boards, and they are professionals in other organizations. And it's very useful to have the conversation about what might have been effective or what have they have experienced with their other associations and affiliates. It's a relationship I work very hard at fostering and encouraging. Someday they may have to pick up the phone and call me and say we need to investigate the CEO or somebody else or a colleague. And someday I may have to pick up the phone and say the same thing to them. So it's a very, very important relationship to me. And I have, I think, been very fortunate, and they've never said, we hate your plan and we're not going to approve it. I actually don't get my plan approved. I do present it to the audit committee.
Now, you have a lot of autonomy in what you can do. So in situations, organizations where you worked in the past or that you know of, how is it different for a larger organization with bigger structure and maybe bigger budgets and more reporting lines that they have to go through?
Yeah. The one thing, you know, I know my universe, I don't know their universe, right? And at the end of the day, one of the first CEOs I worked with said to me, Ellen, if it doesn't bring a dollar in the door, why am I spending a minute of my time on it? And I think you have to realize, while no matter how supportive your board and your executive team and your employees are of ethics and compliance, we're not bringing a dollar in the door, right? So you have to kind of think about, well, what are the other priorities and how do they synergize or how do they conflict? And that's kind of back to my statement about, well, you know, IT's been caught by surprise. I said, well, you know, this is part of my priorities for this year. And they kind of go, not even on my list, sweetheart. Sorry. It's just, you know, we're implementing Office 360, or we're giving everybody new laptops, or we're doing whatever. And who cares? Who cares? So to that end, one of the things I do is I sit down with the head of IT and HR, and I say, these are my goals for the year. Any we could share? Is there anything that I'm doing that helps you with your goals? Maybe is there anything that you're doing that helps me with my goals? Right? Because it shouldn't be a fight. It shouldn't be a fight for time and resources. Let's think about how can we work together. And when people are thinking about their planning, often I think, you know, the ethics and compliance office is over here, and who cares what they're doing? But maybe something that I want to bring in for communication is going to help HR. Maybe it's going to actually help all the corporate strategy.
Once you have a product in place, what are some of the criteria you use to evaluate whether it's working or not, doing what you expected? How long do you think you have to have it before you can make a fair determination on what's there? And if there is a problem, what is the procedure for dealing with that?
So one of the things that I have found to be a little bit problematic is reporting, right? Today is all about data. I need to get it quickly. I need to visualize it. I need to access it. I need to share it, right? And I think, particularly when we think about case management systems or training systems or all of those kinds of things, they sit in their own silos. Not good. Not good. We really need to think about the fact that this is the organization's data and how can we share it. When I report to the audit committee, I frankly still spend way too much time massaging the data and creating the reports. So for me, that's always kind of problematic because I try to be very, very clear and concise about the kind of reports I want. Now, I realize, you know, I do have some customization and maybe I haven't communicated very clearly, but reporting is key. My data doesn't mean anything to anybody else if I can't share it.
We've talked a lot about boards and winning them over. Would it help to have compliance people on the board to make your case? And how do you get that? And if you're not going to get that, how do you get that better engagement with them to get them to understand some of these issues that you're talking about so that they can take actions that would help facilitate these things happening?
So I think we're really at a period in time where certain things are really converging, right? I mean, you look at the Me Too movement, and you look at some of these other movements that have really given voice to the employee. It's all about managing the reputation risk, okay? And it doesn't matter if your title is chief risk officer or ethics and compliance officer or whatever it might be. The board never wants to be embarrassed. The executive team never wants to be embarrassed. And if you happen to be somebody like a Wells Fargo or an Uber or some of those other companies where that data was sitting in the ethics and compliance department, they had the concerns, people did what they were told to do, and nothing happened, that's very problematic. Now, the other part or the other side of that coin is, without somebody who has that mindset about what is happening in our organization, how can you have 214 concerns about the same matter and not done anything about it, right? So we all have these great dashboards, but what are we really telling the board? And that's why I think if we had ethics and compliance officers on some of these boards, we would really be driving organizational justice through the organization. You cannot tell your employees, please raise your voice, please come forward, and do nothing. And the executive team and the board has to make sure that they have oversight over the organizational justice. So I talked to my audit committee about that. I'm very transparent. I have a dashboard that not only goes to the audit committee, but I publish it to the entire organization. How many questions? What type? How many concerns? What type? How long did it take us to close it? What did we do? How many were substantiated, not substantiated? And what was the disciplinary action afterwards? Because otherwise, you know, you're asking your employees to be very, very brave. And let's not pretend that there's no possibility of retaliation, okay? I can't guarantee. When employees come forward to me and say, well, I'm afraid of being retaliated against, all I can say is I will do the best I can to make sure that doesn't happen. But I can't guarantee that. I can't promise it, right? To me, this is just, when you look at Wells Fargo and some of these other cases, what a black eye for the ethics and compliance field. What a black eye, right? Here we are, 20 plus years into the profession, seen as a profession, a seat at the table, and yet this stuff still happens? I don't think it should.
Are you hopeful that these changes will come about? And about how long do you think it'll take to make it happen?
I don't know how long, but I really do think that boards are rethinking diversity, not only in just, you know, male, female, what's the background, where do people come from, but also in backgrounds. And I think there's going to be a huge convergence about risk. Right, you got your chief risk officer, you got your strategy guy, you got or gal, you got your ethics officer, you've got audit. How are we doing all of these things, right? They need to be done in a way with the right data and the right structure so that they're actually helping the organization have the competitive advantage of being ethical, right? Doing business the right way, but also managing that risk. And risk is risk, guys. You know, you can't have your chief risk officer dealing with business risks and your ethics and compliance officer dealing with ethics and compliance risks and then audit over there doing yet another risk assessment.
Where do you anticipate ethics and compliance being in 5 years?
Well, I think the data analytics revolution is here. I think the profession has a real seat at the table and has to influence how artificial intelligence is going to be utilized in our organizations. We'll continue to have to deal with and establish policies around privacy. Where is the line between what our employees do at work and what they do in their private lives? And I think we have a huge opportunity to really continue to elevate and evolve the profession. And I hope that we see lots of ethics and compliance officers on boards.
And that will really make you go into your crystal ball. It's our 25th anniversary here, so what do you see way out into the future, 25 years from now in this profession?
I think there's really going to be this conversion about risk. Risk and strategy, right, are the fundamental questions to any business. It doesn't matter what industry you're in, right? What am I doing and what are the risks of doing it? Risk represents opportunity. So I think that 25 years from now, it's going to look completely different, but I think it's going to have a position in organizations where it's so central to what you do. I can buy a pair of shoes or a bottle of water anywhere, right? It doesn't really matter. But maybe what matters to me is I want to buy it from an organization that gives back to the environment. Or I want to make sure that it's an organization that demonstrates its commitment to equal opportunity. I think ethics and how you do business, not just what business you do, is going to be the differentiator in 5 years and 25 years.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.